there's a lot of different flavors of string theory. There's been advances over the years that's extended to, you know, at a point where we thought string theory should die off. Somehow it gets resurrected. There's brain theory and an advanced 11-dimensional intersecting brains. But it's really just theoretical math. I think some of string theory at the earliest stages saw some very interesting math. Some might call it almost beautiful math related to the Standard Model of particle physics. You know, how quantum field theory and vibrations of energy manifest. And they interpreted it as strings instead of just vibrations of energy. We already know that the particles are moving as waves of energy. Moving as waves. Contained energy. At all different tiny little frequencies. But it could just be math. It's hard for them to truly explain dimensions or understand dimensions without being able to provide any semblance of anything that would make sense trying to understand them or visualize them in a real world, in a real sense. You know, your fifth dimension, your sixth dimension, the way they discuss it, they don't offer any evidence, any supporting evidence of observation or empirical evidence to back it up. They just say, well, this dimension's here. But they're not really describing in any solid sense what that dimension is or how you measure it. And then you're not really talking about a dimension. You're talking about mathematical constructs that allow you to do fancy simulations with mathematical formulas, but it doesn't necessarily equate to reality unless you're able to back it up with observational and empirical evidence. And so I do believe that string theory offers tiny pieces of insight, potentially, into vibrations of energy that manifest through the quantum fields we know to produce our Standard Model. But I think they should have stopped there. Trying to bring in gravity and trying to, you know, unify quantum mechanics and general relativity, I think was a mistake for them to tackle. Because that's not really what string theory is all about. You know, it started as a way to explain the strong nuclear force, but obviously quantum chromodynamics blew that apart. But it still got life breathed into it many times over the years, and I think it's just pushing it's pushing something that doesn't explain reality. They're trying to talk about these different dimensions, additional dimensions and dimensions of this and a higher dimension of that, and lower dimension of that, without really putting forth any semblance of a way to truly visualize this with any sort of empirical evidence. However, when I talk about dimensions, I believe time is the first dimension. I believe we have three spatial dimensions. I mean, we do live and exist within four-dimensional space-time. But we exist because the four dimensions of space-time intersect the plane of mass energy. There is a dimension of energy. There is a dimension of mass. You can traverse a line of energy and be predicted where you'll move along that line and what portion of that line segment you take up, as well as your mass. You can predict how your mass will behave over time. Of not just your mass, but any mass. So a six-dimensional object has an existence where a four-dimensional object is space-time itself. You exist because you know, there's mass and energy. And I also believe there's a dimension of heat and a dimension of luminosity. And I know that infrared radiation is just a different type of EM radiation, but I do believe there is an outwards spheres of influence of everybody, and they're giving off in polar coordinates from some center of mass or center of energy inside a larger nested succession of polar coordinates due to frames of reference that are created by celestial bodies playing follow the leader, where the densest bodies drag their children along, just as the Earth drags the sun and the, just as the Earth drags the moon and the sun drags the Earth, and Sagittarius A star drags drags our sun and so many other star systems. Just as the great attractor drags our Sagittarius A star, our galaxy and other galaxies and other clusters. Just as the shapely attractor is potentially dragging the great attractor and thus pulling us as well. Another 5,000 years of intense astrophysical research and measuring and recording in all different directions will finally give us a clear picture of the universe we live in. Right now, they're still making a lot of guesses. But as we see, there are so many distant quasars sharing the same axis of rotation, meaning that the original momentum that put that spin on them came at the same relative trajectory and relative velocity, which would happen if you had two intersecting frames of reference far, far removed from our scale factor, and tons of collisions occurring at a relatively approximate, similar kinetic energy approaching twice the speed of light, if not possibly even exceeding twice the speed of light. Collisions, hundreds, thousands, millions, tens of millions of collisions, and then tens of trillions of sub-collisions, creating a vast web of energy, plasma energy moving that cooled down and all spinning with leftover momentum, hot plasma energy that cools down, wisps away like little tentacles and strands, and our universe was formed. Just a leftover little pocket. We may be, you know, one of the original parents may be still dragging us along, or we may be in a larger set of nested frames of reference created during that same collision that as a whole is a satellite of one of the original pockets that pass through each other to create our visible universe. But our visible universe likely has siblings, and the densest sibling is attracted to its densest sibling, but it's pulling us along in orbit, and that frame of reference is in orbit around something else, and that frame of reference is in orbit in something else, usually in orbit, sometimes in a collision course, sometimes, you know, free traveling free, unaffected by gravitational forces, until those gravitational forces take hold. But those gravitational forces can act over great distances when they are aggregated together of larger and larger bodies. So our entire universe has a mass that carries a gravitational warping of space-time around it that is able to have bodies orbiting our universe. Our universe has a rotation, almost certainly has a rotation, an axis of rotation, a period of rotation. It probably has an approximate... axis of a period of revolution as well. It probably has satellites. It may be on a collision course. We may never know. We may never know any of those details. That doesn't mean they most likely don't exist. But what were we talking about? I think I got off topic again. I wanted to talk about string theory, I guess, and membranes. So some of what they talk about, colliding membranes and hidden dimensions, they're actually not far off. They're just having a terrible time explaining it because they've gone about it all wrong. Because they've missed the biggest part of the picture is the nested succession of frames of reference that define reality in a never-ending succession outwards and inwards. That's where your curled up hidden dimensions are really stemming from, is an entire sub-quantum realm. Once we accept that everything we can see at our quantum scales, our tiniest, smallest quantum scales that we can measure, femtometers or picometers or tens of trillionths of billionths of meters, whatever it is, the tiniest fractions of space and time. I think we've gone far smaller in the segments of time we can measure than the segments of distance, but they're both very, very tiny. But that doesn't make it the tiniest. Once we begin to accept that's only relative to us, and then we could blow in at that scale factor a trillion years, make that one tiny second look like a trillion years, or a trillion light years, and zoom in. And there will be mass and energy self in there. If it wasn't for the fact that mass and energy there are within space-time everywhere, there wouldn't be no warping of space and time due to mass. It is only because there is mass and energy we can't see within space-time that gravity is able to bend or warp space and time. It is only because there is an entire subquantum realm, far, far smaller, that we can measure, that we actually see the aggregation, the random aggregations of those subquantum waves of energy when we try to measure vacuum energy. We can see vacuum energy popping in and out of existence. That is a subquantum realm. And the manifestations of aggregations of those energy at quantum scales we can measure, popping into and out of existence. If there was no subquantum realm, we would not need virtual particles or renormalization and Feynman diagrams. The fact that we have renormalization and virtual particles and Feynman diagrams clearly shows us there is an entire subquantum realm beyond our current measurements. It was a mistake to call anything elementary. When we begin to accept the reality of infinity, accepting no first second, start with that premise. Start with the premise of no first second. Because there can never be a span of time that did not have an infinite span of time that preceded it. It is not possible. You can have relative time. You can have time relative to our space-time. But that time itself is only part of a larger line segment, out of an eternally infinite line segment of time. Just as there can be no smallest or largest measurement of time, neither can there be a smallest or largest measurement of space. Space-time must be infinite in all directions. And once you begin to appreciate that it must be infinite in all directions and eternal, eternally infinite and infinitely eternal, then you begin to realize what relativity is telling us. Relativity tells us there is no preferred scale factor, no preferred frame of reference, no preferred scale factor. It's all relative to what you're able to measure out and measure in. And everything beyond your ability to measure it is almost invisible. It's there. You can see it's there by how it manifests and what it does, even if you can't measure it. It's relative to us because of how both general and special relativity work together. And we unite gravity when we begin to understand that gravity must be a sub-quantum interaction. If there was, in fact, attractions, electrostatic type of attractions occurring at sub-quantum scales, the manifestation, the aggregated manifestation of those subquantum attractions could be waves of gravitational attraction. And I do believe gravity acts in some type of EM wave because all energy moves in waves. All energy moves in waves. Some way or another. Okay, I guess we touched on a bunch of different things. But the point was that string theories touched on a lot of interesting pieces. But I don't think it's a proper definition of the whole. I think what they call colliding membranes are in fact intersecting pockets. Pockets of space-time, not bubbles. There are no bubble universes because there is no inflation. Inflation doesn't create the universe. We did not come from a hot, dense center. We know the approximate size of our universe during the period of cooling that we call recombination. A span of time, a discrete span of time, across a discrete span of relative space-time, where hot spinning plasma energy cooled to a point where atoms could form, light could move, and we have an idea. That's right. And we extrapolated that because there's an expansion going outwards, that it must have come from something inwards. But there are other possibilities. There could have been an intersecting path. Two galactic nurseries of black holes and neutron stars and huge dust clouds intersecting at say, twice the speed of light. Because within each parent frame of reference, so far removed from each other, they were moving relative to some parent frame of reference they shared, each in excess of the speed of light, colliding, giving off kinetic energy where there were direct collisions without super... you could actually have the ability to produce more mass than the mass you started with if the kinetic energy is high enough. And at twice the speed of light, collisions that are directly head-on could create an immense amount of hot plasma. Hot, hot, hot plasma. And the stuff that isn't directly head-on provides a lot of the angular momentum we see left over all throughout our visible universe. And secondary collisions would have occurred. And maybe even third collisions would have occurred. And the succession of collisions that occurred would create a web, a fiber-like web, strands of that hot energy flowing through. Because inside of when you have two parent frames of reference colliding that are so far removed from our scale factor, somewhere they share a common parent frame of reference. Somewhere, if you go high enough, those two intersecting pockets that do collide share a common parent frame of reference, and one of them would have a higher relative velocity within that parent frame of reference and drive the force of energy and flow of energy following those collisions that occurred. There would be momentum left over in every collision, almost every collision, in one way or another. And incredible amounts of energy released that would be a very similar. The relative kinetic energy involved, when you're talking about 1.94 the speed of light or 1.87 the speed of light, when a neutron star hits a moon or a planet hits a black hole, you're going to get a very, very similar release of heat. So we would predict it to cool down fairly similar. In that span of time it takes to cool down to roughly about the same temperature. So there are other ways to understand our CMB other than a Big Bang. It would also be a prediction if there was that intersection of two immense frames of reference, so much larger than us. Once we begin to accept the fact there is no largest or smallest scale factor, the gravity has been shown to be scale invariant and scale independent. So has electromagnetism have been shown to be scale invariant and scale independent. No reason to suspect they do not work at many other scale factors besides the ones we see them working at now. Fast-moving eddies of plasma, spinning little eddies of plasma, could pick up magnetic fields that could then push them away or attract them together, causing them to take on what we would call mass as they slow down below the speed of light and shoot off like little tentacles spitting out to each side. And that's kind of what we see when we look at the large-scale cosmic structure or superclusters that make up our universe, that they would be predicted. If we all came shooting out of a hot, dense center, we would expect almost like a bicycle spoke type, a wheel spoke type orientation to galaxies and the flow of everything flowing almost outwards. But we don't really see exactly that flow outwards We see it expanding in all different directions outward, and we'd see the orientation of so many different galaxies and quasars to be the same. Galaxies are the same, quasars are the same, same axis of rotation across all different parts of our visible universe. That isn't what we would expect to see if it all came shooting out of a hot center. If you include inflation, the silly ideas of inflation and an inflaton field, faster than light movement of mass, then as it accelerates to the speed of light and then slows down below the speed of light, you would be moving, if you started from a hot dense center and moved outwards, there would be a flow of energy. There would be a flow of movement. There would be a orientation of galaxies and quasars that matched that sort of thing. They'd either be perpendicular to that outward span, or they'd be in a direction that was parallel to spokes or perpendicular to spokes. But it's both random in all different directions and still similar in enough directions. So if you have all these intersecting collisions, many, many of them are going to happen at the same angle of impact. So there'd be leftover angular momentum predicted in many similar situations, leftover heat, very similar in many, many different spots, all coalescing over the time it takes to cool down. And that leftover momentum and that leftover heat, we could have had, again, millions of these collisions, potentially, or it could have been hundreds of thousands of these collisions at incredible speeds. Right now, within our visible universe, we have bodies that have a relative a movement that is faster than the speed of light relative to each other. Within a parent frame of reference, neither one is moving at the speed of light, but relative to each other, they're moving away from each other faster than the speed of light. They are not moving faster than the speed of light, because within a parent frame of reference, that parent frame of reference sees them well below the speed of light. But relative to each other, the galaxies, because of the Hubble flow, are moving away from each other. Certain galaxies at far distances away from each other are moving away from each other. So who is to say that if there were two intersecting paths of frames of reference far, 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 far removed from the parent frames of reference that make up our visible universe, 10,000 or 100,000 parent frames of reference higher than our visible galaxy, our visible universe, intersecting, there'd be an overwhelming majority of collisions occurring potentially at speeds greater than twice the speed of light, and a huge number of them approaching the speed of light, but with the potential of some of them potentially exceeding the speed of light. I haven't ruled it out. But even if it's twice the speed of light, take a black hole and a neutron star and throw them at each other with the relative kinetic energy of 1.98 the speed of light. Even if that was a maximum speed limit within some parent frame of reference between the two of them, which is possible. So, wow, we really kind of jumped around a lot. But string theory did kind of have some pieces that were okay. But then it really, I think, jumped the shark. I think that the curled up hidden dimensions, are fantasy. They're like asking you to believe in an omnipotent creator. There are just certain degrees of realism that you have to adhere to in order to keep a theory cohesive, and it has to be able to offer some form of empirical visualizations that define reality, because otherwise, if you're just looking at mathematical formulas, although math can be used to define reality very well, math is not reality. Just because math says something can happen doesn't mean it can happen. But if it does happen or can happen, then there's the math behind it. But just because there is the math doesn't mean it manifests. There may never be such a thing as a transient wormhole. Wormholes at best may be microscopic, tiny, transient, and non-traversable. There may never be a white hole. They, again, could just be something that exists in formula only. There may never be a singularity. A true actual singularity may never actually exist anywhere in reality and only in math. So just because there's math that talks about something doesn't make it real. What makes something real is the empirical evidence and observations to back it up with predictability and falsifiability. My theory of everything offers us that in multiple ways, and as you listen to all of my podcasts, I hope that you'll begin to appreciate a much bigger, a greater understanding into the inner workings of reality. Because I am very certain that once we toggle that starting assumption at the core foundation of all our standard models, toggle the assumption from speculation of some form of infinity and infinite space-time, start with that premise and re-examine reality, and all of a sudden, so many things all begin to fit together and make so much more sense. Because right now, all of our standard models, for the most part, rely on some premise of some form of finite time or finite space, and they call infinite time and infinite space, eternal time and infinite space, they call that speculation. Well, toggle that to starting premise and re-examine reality and try to see what the implications would be. And I believe you'll begin to agree that it only points to one common theme, an infinite succession of separate nested pockets of relative pressurized space-time, mass, energy, heat, radiation. That's the true nature of our infinite multiverse. There was an infinite span of time that came before our visible universe, and there'll be an infinite span of time that will pass after our visible universe is completely gone. The last footprints we ever existed have faded away, and an infinite span of time will pass. There'll be an infinite number of other collisions in other parts of space-time. Our mass and our energy will be recycled and reused eternally. Atoms become energy back to atoms. It will happen again in different parts for different pieces of us. I mean, different parts of our universe. Our planet will probably, we'll perish together. Well, hopefully, with any luck, we'll be well spread out across our galaxy someday if we choose to seek out that future instead of pissing it all away. But, okay, I guess that's all I wanted to say. I don't think that loop quantum gravity is needed. I don't think there's a quantum strings. I don't think there are point strings. I don't believe there are, there may be point particles, but points are relative. Once you accept that each point, I told you before about our dimensions. Dimensions are just those lines of intersecting measurement. You reach a higher dimension. You reach a higher dimension because a new intersecting line of measurement shows that body on at least two places. If you're only visible on one spot along that new line of measurement, you are indistinguishable from a lower dimensional object. But when you can be shown to exist on at least two or more points along that new line of measurement, you are into that higher dimension. So you start with time. Nothing can exist unless it traverses the line of time. Nothing exists unless it traverses the line of time. A line and a point could not even be said to exist. You can't even talk about a point in space without it traversing its own line of time. You can have a point in time. You can have a point in time and space. But anything that is relative to anything else is a point. Our visible universe is made up from an infinite number of separate points in space-time, and every one of those points in space-time is relative to a finite number of other points in space-time. Every point, every one of an infinite number of points in space-time is relative to some finite number of other points in space-time. At an infinite number of separate scale factors that has existed eternally and will exist forever. We do not need a moment of creation when we understand we exist within a universe that creates itself moment by moment. When you begin to accept or choose to accept the possibility that vibrations of energy make up all there is. Tiny vibrations of energy make up all there is. Everything we can see, we can hear, we can touch is spawned from tiny vibrations of energy. But so is the light that lets us see, the sound that lets us hear, and the resistance that lets us touch. Everything comes from this eternal energy. But that doesn't mean there needs to be a moment of creation. If, in fact, the creation and the creator are one thing, if you believe in, say, pantheistic deism, then you have a universe that creates itself moment by moment. So the creator is creating the universe, but not all at once, not during a moment in time. There was a relative moment of time for our creation of our visible speck of dust that we call our visible universe, a point in time. But inside of an infinitely vast and eternal universe, there is no moment of creation. Instead, it's created moment by moment. And I'll leave you with that. So our podcasts get into a lot of deep stuff. A real deep understanding and examination of reality from a scientific aspect, a logical framework, a logical deduction from almost given facts. I believe there are self-evident facts. Time is infinite. Space is infinite. I believe those are self-evident and undeniable facts. And if you embrace them and accept them, everything else falls into place. And I believe I'll do well to show you all the different ways that's true if you stick around and enjoy these podcasts. So cheers. Peace out. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42.